You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Hello and welcome to Literary Treks, Trek FM's Star Trek books and comics show. I am just one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is the wonderful state-hopping Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, how are you?
I am great. I just moved to a new state, started a new job, and I'm really excited for it, and was able to, despite all of that, squeeze in another Star Trek book to read.
Yes, and we are excited to talk about it because we're back in the Gateways books again. If you missed our last episode, we did an interview with James Swallow about his new Strange New Worlds book, Toward the Night. That was a really fun interview, so I encourage you, if you haven't listened to it, probably go read the book and then listen to it, but always a pleasure to talk to him. But we are luckily back to the Gateways, and really excited to talk about that. So before we do that, I'm just going to tell everybody how to contact us. You can find all our shows by going to our website, which is trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at trekfm. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. While you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and even what's coming up next, which is pretty easy right now because it's just more Gateways books. If you'd like to support the network, we would really appreciate that. Please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. If you have a show that you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer like myself and Greg Rosier are for Literary Treks. And lastly, but not leastly, please leave us a star rating and written review wherever you get your podcasts. It's great for us to get some feedback, and it also helps others to find the show. And we really don't have much in the way of news this week.
Oh. We actually do have one piece of news.
Oh,
you and I kind of knew about this, and I noticed it on some websites, but it hadn't been like, you know, in official news websites yet, but we know that there's a new Picard novel coming out from Dayton Ward to defy fate in February of 2026. We do not have a cover yet, but we do know that the title, and it is a Picard novel, so it'll be a hardcover, and we do know when it's releasing, February. Yeah. So that means we still have October for David Mack.
Ring of Fire.
Yep. Ring of Fire. Then we have December,
or is it November? It's December. I believe it's December,
yeah, for Greg Cox's book. And then we have February. So three books in not too long a span.
Yeah, and David Max's Strange New Worlds, Greg Cox's is original series.
Yeah,
and then a Picard. That's pretty cool. I actually missed that on Picard, so I'm excited for that. Because I was actually just thinking about that the other night. Because I'm like, you know, now that Picard's done, we kind of should get back to that. And, you know, maybe they can't do anything after the series in case they do like a legacy series or something, but more, I still think, and I think we talked about it when we looked at the Art of Picard book way back when, is that I would love to see something that bridges the gaps between each of the seasons since they were so disconnected.
Yeah.
I think that would be really cool to see, just anything at all that can kind of help connect those seasons. And I, you know, who knows what Dayton's doing. I'm sure it's great because it's Dayton, and you know, we'll leave him in the green room for now and let him pound away on his keyboard and finish that book for us. But it'll be really great to get to read that early next year then.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, we're gonna not do any comic books today. We will come back to those and finish up the Star Trek and the Defiant series that are coming to a conclusion, and then we'll kind of get started into the Red Shirts and the Voyager and the Strange New Worlds comics. And there was another comic that was announced that I can't recall the name of, but it's like Kirk in the kind of the far, like the Discovery far future, like during the burn or something like that. So that should be kind of interesting. Yeah. So that's coming out later this year. So we'll definitely get back to some comics, but Jonathan, why don't we kind of go through this little gateway here and go find ourselves some demons?
Absolutely.
We're picking back up with book 4 of 7 in the Gateways saga. This is a Deep Space Nine novel that takes place during the relaunch of Deep Space Nine, like after the series finale. And this one is called Demons of Air and Darkness by Keith R.A. DeCandido. Interestingly, I didn't put this in the outline or anything, but I was kind of thinking about the title. It's never actually referenced in the book. Like, they never, I don't think they mentioned Demons of Air and Darkness, do they?
No. And if you read the book, you wouldn't necessarily know who it's referring to. Is the Demons of Air and Darkness the Iconians? Or is it the Hirogen? Or is it supposed to be something else? When I looked it up, and it said that it's the Iconians. So, yeah. Okay, it's the Iconians.
It is, yeah. And I think, I want to say it was mentioned either in the Next Generation episode, Contagion, where the Iconians are kind of first introduced to us, or it might have been in the Deep Space Nine episode that title escapes me, but like it was mentioned on screen at some point that they were known historically as the Demons of Air and Darkness. So, I mean, that's come up before, but I'm just a little surprised they name a book that and don't actually like reference it ever.
Right. Yeah. It was a weird title. But what's even weirder than the title is the cover, because the cover features a Hirogen and an Andorian, and the Hirogens are in the book, but they're not the main focus of the book. And there's two Andorians in the book, but neither of them have the main plot line or anything. And so it's just kind of interesting, the choices made with this cover. Because really, this book, I would say that it's about Vaughn a lot. It's also a lot about Kira, Kira Nerys. And then it's also about Europa Nova. So like that type of stuff I would get on the cover. But like,
yeah.
I think it was because there were Hirogen, they were like, hey, we can do a DS9 book with Hirogen and people will get excited because that's never happened before. That's we're mixing the series.
Well, I think this was, during the time when there was 2+ books coming out per month. Mm-hmm. And so I think, with the shows that we're on, this is pre-Enterprise. So like, we're just in Voyager at this point. Voyager
is right at the end. They're about end of season 6-ish.
Yeah. And so anybody who's been watching the shows is going to want to read all these books. They'll know probably who the Hirogen are. So to see a Deep Space Nine, then a Hirogen on the front, of course, you're going to be like, well, now I got to find out what's happening here. Mm-hmm. And the Andorian on the cover is Char, who is like one of the new main characters of the DS9 reboot. And I think I can't recall now off the top of my head if he was on the cover of Avatar. I don't believe he was, but he is on one of the Mission Gamma books. But so this would be our first time, really, if you're reading the Deep Space Nine relaunch as it's coming out, this will be like the first time you get to see Char. So I'm kind of wondering if that's why he's on there. But, none of the other books. So like this is the first of the Gateways books that's had a person on the cover.
Yeah.
All of the other books have had either, landscape or
ships.
Ships, battles and stuff. And so maybe they were just trying to move away because it seems like having a planet with something orbiting like the Defiant and, maybe this tear in space or, like this hole in space where this, pollution's coming through. That would have been kind of a neat cover, I think. But
yeah.
I don't know.
Ironically, we were talking before we started recording that I had to ask you, hey, like, who is the Andorian on the cover? Because to me, it looks like a girl, like a 12-year-old yeah. girl. And you said, no, it's a guy, it's an adult guy. And I'm like, that's yeah. interesting with the dreadlocks. That's not what it looks like.
I always thought he looked a little like Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth yeah. Sense. Just painted blue.
I can see
and,
it. You know what? Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So, yes, very young features.
The opening chapter of this book, I really found exciting because not only did you have the Hirogen going against that ship that is, you know, dumping pollution, which I first thought that's a creative way to, like, deal with pollution on a planet is their perspective is, well, we're just getting it out of our planet area. We're yeah. trying to protect our own environment. So in that sense, you're like, you got to give them points. And then they're like, wait a second, they're going to pollute another planet. And when the yeah. gateway comes open, they're just like, just dump it. It'll be fine. Yeah. Just dump it. And they're like, they actually realize, hey, we can do this long term. But yeah. when the Hirogen are attacking, there is a reference to Voyager. A very, very one-off, one-sentence reference to Voyager from the crew of the ship that's dumping the...
They're the Malons, right?
Yeah, the Malons, dumping the stuff. And I had this thought. I was like, wait a second. Are we going to either get some sort of Voyager connection, or will this be the first time that the DS9 crew learns that Voyager is in the Delta Quadrant or something? Like, maybe... we'll get some sort of, you know, we're bringing the series together, connections. I didn't expect to see the Voyager crew in this at all.
Yeah.
But it was like, maybe we'll get more references. And no. Even though Kira later on goes into the Delta Quadrant, there's no other Voyager references. That's it in the first chapter.
There was one other one. Let's see here. When was that? It was at some point... I think Vaughn must have communicated with Starfleet or something like that. Once they realized that this gateway in space over Europa Nova went to the Delta Quadrant, they're like, oh, we might be able to find some help from you. And then he comes back later and he says, oh, you know, we checked the Pathfinder data, because this takes place like right mm-hmm. after Pathfinder.
Right.
Like, oh, and they're like, and Voyager's like way past. And Kira had this thought of like, oh, that's too bad. They could have gotten home. And it's like, oh, yeah, if it would have been
right,
so
yeah.
easy.
So, okay, I had forgotten about that.
It was still a very...
like, and you miss it.
Brief, yeah. So, I'm kind of glad they did that, just because it's, again, if you got the Hirogen and the Malon and everybody, you got to figure out how to reference, and in the Delta Quadrant and all, you got to reference Voyager somehow.
And I'm surprised, going into the plot of the book, that the threat of this kind of toxic stuff was so dangerous. I would think that in the 24th century, 23rd century, whatever, mm-hmm. whichever century we're in at this point, that they would have developed the technology to at least disperse, or at least kind of like blow away, or do something with this. Like, why? As soon as it comes in, like, it's like a huge threat. They got to evacuate the whole planet. Like, it just seemed like maybe it's just because after all the wars and all the battles and stuff, their technology is just not where it needs to be. But it seems like this is a type of thing Starfleet would be able to solve without having to resort to. It's not like the planet's exploding, like right. in a Last Best Hope, where they know the planet's going to be like destroyed, so they have to get rid of it. This is a... it's just radiation. You should be able to do something about that.
That's a good point, because, I mean, you know, when we dealt with this on Voyager with the Malon and them with their sewage, basically, mm-hmm. you know, but I mean, it's a byproduct of the antimatter, mm-hmm. you know, like of the warp engines. And they even talk about how Starfleet and, you know, they're the more advanced cultures in, you know, in the Alpha Quadrant have figured out ways to...
yeah.
Dispose of it. And I think even Janeway did that, like, during the show.
And they mentioned it in here that they've yeah. dealt with antimatter. It's like, so we know there's a process to deal with antimatter, you know, and matter reactions. Why can't you figure out, reverse the process to deal with the waste now?
Yeah, like to like you said, disperse this theta radiation that's out there. Yeah, that's a good point. plot holes right from the beginning, but yeah.
And maybe there is a reason in universe that we're just missing. It's curious. And you know, it didn't detract at all from the enjoyability of the book. I was hooked. And to me, my favorite part of the book was seeing the logistics of, okay, we have this many million people on the planet. We can only take so many in each ship. So we need all these ships that we need. And we need to pull people from around the galaxy. And where are we going to house them? Well, we're going to house them on Bajor. We're going to house them on DS9, all that stuff. Normally, like, when you do logistics in a fiction book, people are going to be like, yeah, I don't care about logistics. I was all in. I was like, I can keep reading about this part. So I thought Keith did a great job.
Agreed. And I mean, it was refreshing having, like, the president of this planet be actually appreciative and not, you know, fight back. We had the one ambassador or whatever he was that council member or something like that came on and wanted bigger quarters on the Defiant or something like that.
But just so stupid.
But it's like typical Star Trek, right? Like when you get these like higher ups that feel like they deserve every like this royal treatment or whatever. And so it was really nice that even when, you know, like if Kira had to give some bad news or something like that, like that the president was still very appreciative and like, you know what, you're doing your best. We're going to figure this out. And so it's nice because, I mean, I feel like almost every time on screen we get something like this, like the person's just a big jerk and we're like, screw these people. Like, we don't. But, you know, and whether it was like this radiation or some other planetary threat, you know, I think having and having a gateway up there where something was coming through, I think was kind of cool. And, but I think it just, it showed like from these gateway stories, like the, I don't know, bad things that can happen, you know, like we've seen in some of the other ones, like in the Next Generation one, you know, we had some battles between the Deltans and, the Carrion, I think is what they're called. You know, so like we're kind of reigniting old wars and old turf wars and stuff like that. Like this one, we're actually showing like natural disasters that are going to happen because of the gateway. So it's not all just like, oh, we can get from here to there very quickly. But like there's actual threats that man-made or you know, sentient being made or not, you know, like these gateways could kind of wreak havoc across the galaxy, really.
And I thought that using all the natural disaster stuff was a good avenue to show Kira's leadership abilities. In the books that I've read for Star Trek, DS9, they don't really highlight Kira's abilities because she's kind of in and out depending on what part of the timeline you're in. And so here, you know, there's no Jean-Luc on the station like there was in Avatar. And there's no Sisko on the station like there is in the series. So this is her first time that she's in charge of everything. And you get to see her leadership style, which works very well. And you also see how she's not always wanting the biggest thing. Like there's a scene where she purposefully chooses not to go in the Defiant and goes in a smaller ship that's less warship-y because, you know, she feels more at home in that other type of ship. And so I liked seeing her leadership style, her ability of diffusing situations, her ability of working with the president of that planet, and the great scene where they divert the asteroid and then they're all worried. They're like, no, we just like hit your planet with an asteroid. And then they're expecting to be chewed out. And the president's just so happy that they saved the town. And they're like, that was not what we were expecting your reaction to be. I thought that was great.
Well, it's like that place where like that lake and the surrounding area is going to be uninhabitable for like hundreds of years, like to say nothing of the rest of the planet with the radiation that's coming in. Right. But the president's like, hey, you know what? You saved our people. You bought us some time. It's wow. That feels good.
Akira's never appreciated like this.
I know, right? Well, and she's going in expecting to get chewed out and, you know, and in some ways, I don't think she, I guess, deserved to be chewed out for anything. But, you know, you go in expecting that, like, hey, you know, something happened. We did the best we could, but it's still not ideal. But, you know, while we're kind of talking about this, like, so we were talking on the other side of the page and have alluded to it here. The gateway that's over Europa Nova, opens into the Delta Quadrant. So it's that's kind of cool. Like, we got like a little bit of a connection there, and, you know, some Voyager connection. You know, this Hirogen is on the cover of the book, but on our outline here, I said the Hirogen quote unquote threat, because, you know, interestingly, the Hirogen only become a threat to our story once Kira and Tyranitar go through the gateway to see what's on the other side, to see if they can stop the radiation from coming through. That's when they find this, again, quote unquote threat. You know, for me, it was kind of fun seeing Tyranitar, and I've mentioned this on previous episodes, you know, when we're kind of leading up to this book, like, who doesn't want to see Jem'Hadar and a Hirogen fight? I want to say David Mack gave us one in Warpath.
He did.
I might be mistaken on that. I know, like, Tyranitar has, like,
that's he battles people in Warpath, but I don't know if he ever fights a Hirogen.
And I might be confusing it with this one then, because, you know, like, that is kind of a, like, in the, and the battle between them
it
was pretty epic. So, it, you know, like, that's cool, but, like, that didn't need to be there. You know, no. I mean, yes, they needed some kind of threat on the other side of the gateway to, you know, get Kira to have to be on the planet, but Tyranitar is still alive and can go back, you know, or whatever. But it just, you know, we got some Hirogen in the prologue or in the first chapter or whatever it was, maybe once kind of in the middle of the book, and then some at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And that's really about all we got.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of Hirogen, which is sad, because I felt like they were a very underutilized Star Trek villain species. I felt that, and I felt this for years, that I would have loved to have seen, like, assuming they had not stopped the post-Nemesis universe, there were two things I still wanted to see. I wanted to see a crossover series dealing with, like, the Hirogen, or a crossover series, and my pitch would have been that the Hirogen are fleeing the Delta Quadrant, and, you know, they're fleeing into the Alpha Quadrant asking for asylum, and our characters are like, wow, what on earth would make the Hirogen flee? Yeah. And my pitch would be species 8472, because, like, what's the one species that, like, strikes fear in the Borg would strike fear in the Hirogen or something? It's species 8472, and we never got a big series with them.
Yeah.
And even with Kirsten's, all of, she would, what, like 10 or 12 post Nemesis books, none of them have species 8472. And I'm just like, why did we never get them again? So I would love to see those, more of those two species. So I'm happy we got what we got in this book, but I was just kind of like, it didn't fit the best, but, you know, maybe it would have been cool to see the Hirogen also, like, attacking the planet at the same time.
Yeah.
And now you have two threats to deal with. You have the physical enemies and the existential threat, because that's actually something that a lot of countries have, is that they have a physical threat that they have that they're fighting with someone on their border or terrorists or whatever. But then they have this existential threat of climate change or something else. So I think that, feel like if Canada had added that in, it would have given a layer of complexity that would have made the Hirogen storyline work better.
Yeah, like if he kind of came in through the gateway, started orbiting Europa Nova, and now we've got this threat, we got to battle along with trying to evacuate everybody and everything. Yeah, I just wish, and, you know, we only have 288 pages or so to get all of this in. And I mean, you know, this was really only one of the storylines. I mean, like, we also had this story with Char and Nog trying to figure out why there were no gateways within like 10 light years of the Bajor system, which, you know, is important for our, you know, for the whole series, because it's like, okay, if we find out, you know, what's going on with these, we got to know how to, like, if somebody else gets the gateways, we got to figure out how to turn them off. And I mean, just for the, again, like, this environmental catastrophe that's happening at Europa Nova. And so, you know, I thought Nog and Char together were pretty good, just because they're both, I mean, Nog is, he's kind of grown up fast because of, you know, his experience in the war. He's gotten promoted fast because of field promotions. Char is just, young and somewhat naive, or you know, whatever. He's just very young in his career, and so kind of pairing those two together, two very intelligent characters together to solve this, I thought was a pretty smart move.
Both of whom have parents who are in high position, political positions that they don't want to overshadow them. That made a really cool conversation where I can't even remember which one said it, but one of them said, "How you never asked me about my dad," and he's like, "Well, I know that, you know, I wouldn't want people asking me about my parent and making it all about them." And the other one's like, "Ah, that's so great." So,
yes. well, and this is where, and you and I were talking beforehand, just about the Char storyline in general, like, and I didn't mention this at the top of this show, but if you go back through our back catalog, I can't remember off the top of my head if it was like Bruce and Dan or Matt and Dan or Chris and Matt or somebody, when they, like, back when Literary Treks was going through the DS9 relaunch, they went through this book already as a part of the DS9 relaunch. You know, we're looking at this more from the perspective of the Gateways storyline, but, you know, acknowledging the fact that this is part of the DS9 relaunch. But I do feel like the Char storyline with his mom and her kind of like pulling him off the mission and trying to get him to go back home, I feel like a lot of that detracted from this particular story, you know. Just because, like, it did nothing for the Gateways story. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand they're trying to, like, seed in some things for future DS9 storylines. But in this particular case, I feel like it just kind of detracted. It could have just been character, like, they could have had some character development for Char or whatever. But, like, setting up stuff about something happening on the Andorian homeworld, I think, you know, he says towards the end, like, our, you know, planet or people are going extinct, or, you know, something to that effect. And, or, you know, within a few generations. And that's not something that gets resolved in this book. I mean, it's not even resolved in the Gateways books. It's, you know,
it's kind of just dropped the whole, in this book, at least. He has a conversation with his mother and they kind of have an argument, and then, like, that's it. That's it. And it's, you and I were saying beforehand, it's works better in the other, you know, this shows up, this concept shows up not only in the Typhon Pact, but also in the Fall series, and the exact same storyline of Char's mother, his Zavi or whatever they call it, showing up, trying to convince him to come back to Andor. He refuses, she leaves, and then later on, he eventually decides to go and help out. That's the exact same story happens and is resolved, and I think was handled better in the other books. So it's just strange that they did like a trial run here with that storyline. It just, as you said, it kind of detracts a little. And it sounds like we're being really nitpicky on this.
Yeah.
We're both really positive on the book. We both really enjoyed this one. Just have all these tiny things to talk about, which means we were paying attention.
Yes. Well, and I mean, this is the struggle too with this particular Deep Space, or this particular entry in the Gateways books, is this is, and we haven't gotten to New Frontier yet, but so far in the Gateways series, this is the only book that's got a continuing storyline with the characters outside, you know, like we've otherwise, I can't remember exactly where this takes place. I think it's like, is this right after Insurrection?
It's after Insurrection, but before Nemesis. So they couldn't do too much with Next Gen because they still hadn't resolved all that.
Yeah, and I'd even argue that the Challenger book that we read, which we weren't too keen on, but that one, you could tell me, I don't think you needed necessarily to read all the New Earth books to get what was going on in the Challenger book. I mean, it was kind of confusing probably, but like not, I don't know. Like,
oh yeah, it wasn't necessarily confusing. It just wasn't good.
Yeah. It just, yeah. They should have stopped while they were ahead.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, I understand what they were doing with Char in this book. And, you know, there was other things that they could have done too. In fact, we actually got introduced to new characters that will continue to appear in Deep Space Nine books. So like Trier or whatever her name is, like the Orion. I forgot that this is where she came from. For some reason, I was thinking that she came from the Mission Gamma books, but then also Gol Masset, who we were introduced to, was like one of the first, one of the first Cardassians that we were introduced to, like back in Next Generation. And I will say I loved how they handle that, because it, you know, is played by Mark Alaimo, who played Gul Dukat in the show. And so the fact that they were all like, oh my gosh, he looks exactly the same, he sounds exactly the same, oh wait, but this one has whiskers, or you know what, like mustache or whatever, and you know, like played it off like, oh, he's my cousin, please don't hold it against me, or whatever, and like I'm actually trying to do good. And even as a reader, I'm like, I don't know if I trust this guy or not. But I really appreciated how he handled Masset, and I thought that was a pretty fun addition to this, to the Deep Space Nine canon.
I'm really conflicted, because the introduction of his character is that, oh, this Cardassian ship shows up, and it says, and she says, Gul Dukat, and it cuts. That's the end of the chapter. Yeah. And then I don't think it's the next chapter, but the next time you see them, it's like the first line is, oh, I'm not actually Gul Dukat. Yeah. I'm his cousin, Gul Masset. And it's just one of those, it's one of those, hey, I'm going to insert this and make it this dialogue to make you think that Gul Dukat is back so that you keep reading. It's one of those like author tricks to try to, it's kind of like at the, like putting it like your cliffhanger at the end of the episode of a TV show that goes into the next one, to put like your cameo or to do your villain reveal right then, only to have it not be exactly that in the next episode. You're like, okay, I see what you did, but did you have to do it that way? That's how I felt here. I was like, did you have to cut it there? You are trying to bait the audience. I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying you're baiting the audience by cutting the chapter there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's kind of one of those like, turn the page, keep reading, you'll see what happens. But
I did like Gul Masset, and he's immediately like, he knows the reputation that Gul Dukat has, and he's like, nah, I am not going to be blamed for all this. I'm not going through this every time. So he's like, please just treat me as an individual.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is, like, I don't remember him much from the Next Generation episode where Masset shows up. I know he's kind of antagonistic, but not obviously like Dukat. But it is, even for me as a reader, hard in this book to really fully trust him. Like, what's his, you know, what's his motive? He says he's just here to help make amends for, you know, what happened during the occupation and the Dominion War and all this stuff. But it does make you got a kind of question. It's a Cardassian. We've been trained to not like them.
Yep. But we've talked about, you know, some of these different plot lines. We haven't even gotten to my favorite one yet.
Yeah.
Which was Quark. I don't know how, but in the DS9 relaunch, Quark has become my favorite character. And it's so weird, because he shouldn't, but it's just, he's so slimy, and he just gets these DS9 wave outsiders, like in Avatar, in Mission Gamma, in this book. He's just been given all of the best scenes and some of the best lines. And there, you know, they have the reveal of who is actually with him. And I should have known, because I've read the next books, so I know where their dynamic goes. But it was a complete shock to me reading it, which means he did a good job.
Yeah.
Although he kind of baits us a little bit, because he says, why would I bring this Orion girl with me? Oh, and he thinks something sexual, and he's like, oh, that's why. And that's not actually, you know, if we're actually in the head of Quark, that's not what he's thinking at that moment. It's I brought Rolaren because she's going to protect me. But you can't reveal that in like his first chapter. You have to wait.
It is hard when they do something like that, like especially when it's, because I feel like they've done this before in other books where there's a character in disguise and there's really no hints along the way of who it is. And then all of a sudden, because I mean, she was described as like a blonde Dabo girl or whatever. And, you know, he even describes it as like, well, my best one, Lita, you know, moved away. And so, like, I had to bring this one. And, you know, and it's funny because I have read this book before a long time ago. I did not remember it was Roe until about like, I did remember it before the reveal, but it was like right before the reveal. Cause I got, you know, like halfway through the book or whenever it is that they do it. And I thought, where's Roe in all of this? Cause you know, I forgot that she wasn't yet like the captain of the station or anything. And I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, but she's there and she's like chief of security. And so then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Is she undercover? And then, yeah, like we get the big reveal, which was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed all of that. And I really enjoyed where he gets in with the Orions and he finds out who they're negotiating with, although he actually kind of knew. But they find out, and then his cousin's there, and they explain his cousin at the backstabbing. He's like, oh no, you guys are about to kill me. And then they get really close to killing him, and he's like, Ro, you're gonna wait any longer? You could have cut it. You had a few more seconds. You could have waited.
Yeah, well, and even like the tassels that she was wearing, like that at the beginning, Quark right. mentioned like how those seemed a bit unnecessary for her outfit, but those were like her weapons, like disguised, and so it was kind of a Chekhov's gun kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. If this was the show, like if they were writing this as an episode, they would have flipped this, where we would have seen the scene on the station. Of them talking and realizing that they need her to go undercover. And so the whole time you'd know she was undercover, because in the show there's, if they were to shoot the show the way that this book is written, you would know it was Ro, because, you know, just makeup and hair, you're going to know it's the same actress, unless they try to do like Mission Impossible style, like,
yeah, I was just thinking that.
Which they're not going to do.
Yeah. Cause why would they need to, like, they're right.
Which would have been cool and kind of, right. So, you know, it's interesting thinking about the way you write a novel is going to be different than the way you write a TV show, because what works in the show wouldn't work here, and what works here wouldn't work in the show.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I did appreciate the kind of the background scene one that we got after the reveal, because I agree, like that would have been something we would have seen ahead of time. But what was funny is, like, by the time we got to the end where I guess it was Garrick went after whoever the Cardassian was, Daru or something like that. I kind of forgot about him already, because like that seems so inconsequential to the plot, but it was just like, oh, okay, whatever. But I mean, yeah, it's funny because I mean, we saw throughout the show, like, that Quark was actually a good guy. Like, he always, you know, even if he didn't like it, you know, he would give up his profits to be able to help, mm-hmm. you know, his friends or whatever. And I feel like we see that a lot more now, you know, like in these books, more of his character and the kind of the places he's willing to go to help. And I mean, some of it's to get himself out of trouble or whatever, but like, but to be able to kind of pull off a kind of a ruse like this whole time with the Orions and his cousin and everybody was a lot of fun. And I mean, this is also the storyline that finally reveals something we probably had figured out all along anyways, that these are not actually the Iconians.
But the Petra.
Which
by the way, is another reason why would you use this title? If he's not actually the Iconians, why are you naming the title, the alternate title of the Iconians?
Because
why not have like a unique name for the Petra?
Yeah. And I mean, well, and maybe we're going to get some reveal later that the actual demons of Air and Darkness have been the Petra all along and not the Iconians or something, like that.
Maybe
some of the legends have gotten a little mixed up or something. I don't know. But, and you know, like, we get the reveal pretty much at the beginning of this book that, I mean, they at least hinted that these were not the Iconians, because, you know, like, we get some inside baseball with them, like, you know, trying to figure out the gateways. And then even once the gateways get shut down and they're not sure what happened, like, okay, it's like, okay, we're really sure now that these are not. So once it's revealed it's the Petra, you know, I'm sure for anybody listening, you know, like, you know, in Starfleet, they're going to be like, okay, the Petra, who's that? You know, and I mean, even like Ro and Quark, and you know, when they're getting away and they hear this, so they're called the Petra, they're just like, okay, you know, so it's not the Iconians. Got it. And, you know, we're like, oh, we remember them, though. I think it was from Chainmail, from the Challenger book.
No, or was it from the first book.
Was it from the first one? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Because I was reading this, and I was like, yay! And also, I had this exact same moment when reading the third book, which was, the first book finally is relevant!
Yes. Yeah. Well, and we even get a shout-out to the first book here, I think, yeah, during their big meeting.
During the beginning.
Yeah, when Scotty came in.
Which, okay, is it the same big meeting from the third book? Because I didn't pull them out to compare, but the dialogue seemed different.
Well, that's a good question, because I think we're going to see this again, this same conversation again when we get to the New Frontier book. But like, I thought that was a fun way to like tie everything together, because I remember in the Next Generation book, and, you know, Picard sees Kira and Vaughn, he kind of, you know, is thinking to himself about Vaughn, but, you know, like in, you know, probably the events of Avatar and everything. And some of the side conversations that we get to hear a little bit of in the Next Generation book, we get a little bit more of, or different views of here. And then, you know, like at the end of the conversation we hear in this one, we hear, I love you. And it turned out like it was like Captain Shelby from New Frontier saying that to Captain Calhoun, which I think we're going to get that entire conversation in the New Frontier book. So like, I thought that was just a fun way to do that, to really, because this is the first time, you know, in all of these crossover books that we've gotten, like this, I think before this we had, the Section 31, like those four books, and then we had the Invasion and the Day of Honor, and I feel like there might have been another one or two, but like this is the first one, like first like saga crossover kind of books that we've actually gotten effectively the same scene, just from a different perspective. So I thought that was a really fun way to do it. And yeah, I'd be curious to copy or to compare the dialogue to see how closely they matched. They even noticed, like, you know, when Vaughn steps aside to go make some, you know, calls, you know, it's like there's stuff happening in the background that we probably already heard before. So we didn't need that again.
The scene certainly was the same, and it's the same meeting. It's just that when I was reading it, I was like what Admiral Ross says and what Picard says seems like it was a different interpretation. And maybe they're like, guys, don't think too hard about it. It's just different authors writing the same scene. Don't.
Yeah.
Because I know for Star Wars, they would do this where they, you know, when they did the Tales from the Bounty Hunters book, that's four or five novellas. Each novella tells the bounty hunter scene in Empire with the bounty hunters, we don't need their scum, from a different perspective. But because it's a movie that they're basing it off of, they all have the exact same dialogue because they're all building off of something. So it's just interesting. Star Trek's trying that, but instead of having a movie, they're just the authors working off this together.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Well, I mean, we've gotten more information now about what's going on with the Gateways. We know it's not the Iconians. We've had a little bit of time in the Delta Quadrant, but not with Voyager. We're actually going to get to Voyager next time.
Yeah.
And they don't have all this information, though. So I'm really kind of curious, you know, where that's going to go. And it's, you know, another book before we get back to our kind of, you know, Alpha Quadrant with the New Frontier books.
But, and the Voyager book is another, Voyager has an opportunity to get out. No.
Nope. Of course not. But yeah, I mean, this was a really fun book, you know, kind of just taken off from the last one, from the Next Generation one. And, you know, when we got, I mean, all of these authors are great in their own right. Obviously, we didn't care much for the first couple books, but now that we're really kind of getting in, the series kind of seems to be finding its, you know, kind of gaining steam and, you know, finding its path and everything. You know, I really enjoyed this. I just like went real quick through this book. I mean, just a couple days, and it's kind of one of those ones I kind of couldn't put it down. The chapters aren't super long, which kind of helps, but you know, I ended up giving this one a 5 out of 5. I mean, I'd probably give it more like a 4.5 out of 5, just because even with all the nitpicks we had and everything, just a fun story, action packed, you know, just kind of another, like, just right after the Next Generation one, it's like, yes, good, we are full steam ahead on this series. Like, I'm excited to get into the next one. You know, Keith R.A. DeCandido did his job. He understood the assignment, you know, he went with it. And so, yeah, I think this was a, as part of the Gateways books, just a fantastic one. What were your thoughts on that?
I really enjoyed it as well. I was not quite that high on it. I gave it out of 5. I think I just gave it like a 4. I usually on my Goodreads and Facebook and stuff, I rate things out of 10. So I gave it a 7.5 out of 10, which is about the same, about a 4 out of 5. But I still think for this series, the previous book is still the standard bearer in quality. The Next Generation book, because it had the best action, it had the best storyline. It was, hey, this, like, it, to me, it was like the official start of the Gateway saga. Like I said, we had two prequel type things that are like, yeah, kind of getting some stuff. Hey, it's actually happening now. So I still think that's the best, but this is a strong number 2 so far and does help propel into the future. And I'm excited for Voyager. And then we have New Frontier. And then we have the crossover book of short stories and novella. And then we'll see what we read after that.
Yeah. I mean, there is an epilogue in the Starfleet Corps of Engineers books. Well, we haven't talked about if we'll read that or not. I don't know. It's not in the book. I know it's on book form, but yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm definitely excited to get on to the next one too. Well, it's always fun to have a book that we both enjoy, even if we nitpick. You know, we try to give honest reviews on this, and that sometimes means we're picking nits, and sometimes that means we're trashing books, which, you know, we don't set out to do. It's, you know, and the first two books here didn't deter us from continuing. And yeah,
right.
definitely excited to get into Christy Golden's entry into this No Man's Land and the Voyager. What did we say? This is going to be in season 6, 7, probably.
Yeah, like right between Voyager. 6 and 7. Yeah. This was at the time where it was pretty much Voyager was just Christy just cranking out just a ton of books. There were other people who wrote Voyager books, but towards the end, you know, she had the 709 book, she had the 3 Dark Matter books, she had No Man's Land, and then she had the 2 Homecoming books all within the span of like 2 years.
Yeah, which Matt and I did, we did talk about Dark Matters a year or two ago, and those were not her best. Greatest,
no.
Yes. But we do know that she is a great author, so we can we can hope that she's followed the lead of Greenberger and DeCandido and turns out a good one. But until then, though, why don't you tell everyone how they can find you?
You can find my YouTube channel at Jonathan Cohn. You can find my Twitter feed where I talk about all things books and sometimes movies and sometimes politics. Also at Jonathan Cohn. And you can find my Goodreads account at Jonathan Cohn. The easiest way probably to find my Goodreads account is to find one of the books that we've talked about on Literary Treks and then look for my review, which is on there. So everywhere is the same, Jonathan Cohn.
That makes it nice and easy. Well, mine's on Goodreads, Letterboxd. That's where I'm most active. I don't watch as many movies though. I'm reading so many books.
That's a good thing.
I know, right? Yeah. I just read Gone Girl. A few days ago, and then rewatched the movie, and my movie rating actually went down a little bit after reading the books. The book was so good. Even though Gillian Flynn wrote the movie. But anyway, you can see that rating and my rating for the book and for this book at Goodreads and Letterboxd. And I'm at Knitting Trekkie. And then I'm also on Facebook, lurking around at the Babel Conference and sometimes in some of the other Star Trek book channels and threads and whatever in Facebook. So find me there. But that's it for today. And I want to just say thanks for everyone for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number 1.